Ready to hear argument now in the case of Sanderson against Culligan International. Mr. Hendrick.
Well, thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court. First, I'd like to thank the court and thank the clerks and the whole system. Actually, I recall when I was a sophomore in high school and I saw that page where the federal judiciary was laid out and a district court and the courts of appeals and the Supreme Court. I'm privileged to be here, and I appreciate the use of the resources, as does my client, Charlie Sanderson. I'm here to make one point, Your Honors, and that is that Charlie Sanderson deserves to have his case heard by a jury. This is a free market system. There are certain checks and balances built into that system, and we feel that Charlie Sanderson and his technology has been certainly obstructed and restrained for about these 20 years now. If you compare Culligan and the rest of the water quality, the ion exchange industry with Charlie, you would have Charlie might be about the size of this button, and the rest of these guys would be somewhere above the ceiling here. It's a huge difference in what Charlie's tried to do and the people he's tried to do it against.
Mr. Hendren.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm going to ask you about First Health because you argued that the materials are false on their face and that they can be enjoined without examining the actual effect on the consuming public. But the district court rejected that argument based on our court's decision in First Health.
Mm-hmm.
And that was not addressed in your brief. So what I'm wondering is how would you distinguish First Health?
Well, Your Honor, I'm sure the court is correct in its analysis of my brief and the arguments there. I would just suggest that we have underlying that whole case, we have the antitrust allegations, and that was the part that we were not permitted to proceed on, Your Honor. There has been, over the course of these many years, a series of publications, and I think what Judge Hamilton...
Are you going to address First Health?
Your Honor, on the Lanham Act case, I feel that the court at the trial level did not really address all of these publications. I don't know if I can distinguish First Health from the facts, but we have a whole series of activities over these many years, Your Honor. It was just not the publications that Judge Hamilton looked at, but we had a whole series of publications, and I think that's where Judge Hamilton was in error. We have, over the years, all of these publications, not just what happened in Texas and in California, Your Honor, but all these publications, Culligan Water Treatment Bulletins, Culligan, Why Water Treatment Gadgets Cannot Work, Culligan Catalogs, Marketing Materials, Synod, Do Water Conditioning Gadgets Work, all of these other bulletins from Culligan sent out to all of their dealers all over the world. Just the facts on magnetic treatment, again, from the point of view of the ion exchange industry. Each of these has now been admitted by Culligan's research director to be wrong, because Culligan now admits that that magnetic water treatment works, and they've known it since the early 90s. Now, Your Honors, I would ask you to consider how tough it is for a salesman or a maker or a manufacturer distributor to go up against all these. Here's a report published by the Water Quality Association from Purdue University, right down the road from where Charlie Sanderson's operation is in Fort Wayne. Purdue University, now this has now been discredited by Culligan itself, but Culligan was the instigator of all these publications for all these years. Now maybe I can't distinguish First Health, Your Honor, but I submit that...
Well, but that's the big question here. Is your claim legal, or does it suggest that you just need a better advertising agency?
Well, Your Honor...
We do not ordinarily attempt to resolve scientific disputes in federal court.
Yes, sir.
Galileo could not appeal to federal court and say the Pope really misunderstood the nature of the Copernican system. Now, the judgment of history is with Galileo, but that doesn't mean that there was ground for federal litigation. Now, that's much the same question here.
Well, Your Honor, I see the white light is on, and again, I would just point out that we have many, many activities over the...
You attempted to reserve 10 minutes for rebuttal, but your obligation is to state your case now and
yes,
not
sir.
Have a rebuttal that exceeds the length of your main argument.
Well, maybe I can ask you another question.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
See where we go with that.
Sure.
Because the district court granted summary judgment on the Lanham Act based on two grounds. One of which was that the statements and the distributions were not commercial advertising or promotion within the meaning of the Lanham Act. So what I am wondering is how you would challenge that holding with respect to the San Diego and the Austin statements and distributions.
Well, Your Honor, again, we feel that Judge Hamilton unnecessarily limited the review of those documents. In fact, it was just not in evidence was just not these documents, Your Honor, not just these two incidents, but years and years of publications by Culligan over all of these publications against magnetics. And at a time when Culligan knew that magnetic water treatment worked. Again, the Sherman Act aspect of the case, Your Honor, trade show bans, the publication of all these materials, interference with his contracts, all these were properly pled, Your Honor, and due to the circumscription of our case by Judge Hamlin, we were limited. We could not even go forward on the antitrust allegations, Your Honor. Ladies and gentlemen.
See, what I'm trying to get to is how the statements and distributions would constitute commercial advertising or promotion under, you know, under the Lanham Act.
Your Honor, again, we would submit that those were questions of fact, and Judge Hamilton was premature in making those determinations. In fact,
counsel, your brief begins with a scientific statement. So let me ask you, how, in your view, does magnetic water purification work? Your brief talks about preventing the precipitation of calcium carbonate.
Yes, sir.
In heat transfer systems, but calcium carbonate is not ferrous. It's not magnetic. Calcium, carbon, and oxygen are the three elements in that material. None responds to magnetic fields, so why would magnetism affect it?
Well, in fact, Your Honor, I believe Dr. Cho at Drexel University, when he, and I'm not a scientist, Your Honor.
Your brief contains an awful lot of scientific propositions, so just tell me in your words how magnetic fields could affect three elements, none of which is ferrous and none of which has any magnetic moment.
Well, in fact, the magnetic effect, as I have observed it and as I understand it, Your Honor, it prevents the accumulation of hard lime scales. So, in fact, what the
yes,
magnetic...
lime is calcium, carbon, and oxygen. None of those elements has a magnetic moment. You can put a field as strong as Jupiter's next to them, and they won't move a millimeter. So why would a magnetic field affect them?
Well, Your Honor, as I understand it, again, I'm not a scientist. As I understand it, it affects the binding of the electrons in the calcium carbonate structure. And this has been admitted to by Culligan itself. They admit that it works. They sell it. And as Dr. It does not rely upon iron in the water. In fact, iron is an impediment to the treatment through magnetics. What magnetics does, instead of the lime scale accumulating in a hard scale, we've all seen it in the bottom of a tea kettle, that instead of scaling, it actually flocculates out and settles or loosely adheres to whatever it may be, a cooling tower, a boiler, all those things. And again, I'm not the expert, the science expert, but I spent a lot of time on it, and Dr. Cho is the expert, and he's retained by the American Society of Heating and Refrigeration Engineers. And his theory is that it is not, the magnetic effect permits the binding. It forms a different substance. There is an aragonite substance and also a scaling substance. So I believe the science is in, Your Honor. I may not be able to express it very well, but I believe the science is in, and it has been in when Charlie first started selling these things in the 80s. And then there is no question that he was very successful. He had over $1 million business, little family business in Fort Wayne. This Perdue report came out in 85, and it just destroyed his business. And this Perdue report continues to be cited by the community, is still published on the Canadian Water Quality website. But Dr. Frank, this is a research director of Culligan International, admitted under oath and deposition in this town that magnetics does have a beneficial effect on scale. So, again, I'm not an expert on the science, Your Honor, but I would submit that the science is in, the results are in, Culligan has admitted it, and yet, up through 2000, this is what their dealer, one of their biggest dealers, was saying in Texas. Is this the stuff you want in your home? This is being passed out at a home show, and this gets back to the restriction by Judge Hamilton. This may have been the tip of the iceberg, ladies and gentlemen, but this, all these publications, they were marketed as, they were sold to the members of the ion exchange industry as marketing materials. And this was presented to Judge Hamilton. And Judge Hamilton, instead of allowing us to proceed with the case, he very narrowly constrained our ability to predict. We finally got discovery on this case, and when we finally got discovery, that's when Frank Brigano admits that Culligan has known since the early 90s that magnetics does work, and he also admits that Culligan is selling magnetic equipment in Europe.
Could I ask just a practical question?
Yes,
somebody
sir.
That has to change the salt and the water softener,
yes, sir.
Bottled water and all this other stuff,
mm-hmm.
What does it end up with? Better water to drink, better water to wash clothes in, better water to keep rust out of the pipes, or what? Or
actually,
does it do everything?
Actually, all it does, Your Honor, it prevents the accumulation of hard lime scale. That is Charlie's only claim. He doesn't claim...
And that's a lot less than a lot of other products.
Oh, absolutely, Your Honor, absolutely. But that is his claim. And what it does, it leaves all the elements in the water. It leaves the calcium in the water. And I don't know about you all, but, you know, I buy aspirin with calcium in it because water softening removes things. It substitutes salt for calcium. That is how ion exchange works. Magnetic water conditioning does nothing, but it creates a temporary charge in the calcium carbonate, and then that charge prevents for a period of time the accumulation of that calcium carbonate into this hard lime scale. And this is a billion dollar business, Your Honor. This is what people, engineers, spend their lifetimes trying to do, is keep scale out of cooling towers, industrial boilers, retorts. This is a very important technology to this country, and I would suggest that the pattern of conduct here over the course of these many years continuing into the end of the 2000s reflects an ongoing suppression and restraint of trade. It is the dark side, if I may say, of technology transfer, and I believe it is exactly what we had. We were given these rights.
What does this have to do with technology transfer?
Well, Your Honor, technology transfer is the moving of appropriate technology into the marketplace and its commercialization.
Yeah, well, it usually means moving it to other nations.
Well, yes, I would not argue with the court, but if I may, Your Honor, I'm...
Mm-hmm, certainly. Mr. Reinwald.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. I'm Gail Reindel of Summer Barnard in Indianapolis for the appellee Culligan International Company. Much of what the plaintiff discusses in his brief on appeal and much of what you heard in the argument here today is simply not at issue on this appeal, and here's why. In May 2001, the district court dismissed the plaintiff's antitrust claims with prejudice, but gave him leave to replead his Lanham Act claims. He did. He filed a third amended complaint, which Culligan then moved to dismiss. In September 2002, the district court dismissed with prejudice all of the plaintiff's Lanham Act claims other than those alleged in two specific paragraphs of that complaint. Plaintiff's brief to this court does not even mention this dismissal with prejudice, much less assert any argument as to why that was an erroneous ruling. Therefore, all of his Lanham Act claims, other than the two that were not dismissed, are simply not at issue on this appeal.
Yeah, I'd like to just ask you something, Ms. Reindel. Wouldn't it be a reasonable inference that the information packet that was provided at the Austin Home and Garden Show to Rorick was also provided to many others who approached the booth that day?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. It could very well be that Mr. Rorick baited the Culligan dealer into that. There's no reason to infer that this was being passed out to others at the show. Moreover...
Well, why in the world would you bring packets to a show? I mean, if the packet... I mean, one... You could actually imagine that only one of these packets was handed out?
Your Honor, there was absolutely no evidence that more than one was handed out. The other point I would make is, even if more than one were handed out, a hand-to-hand distribution...
What do you mean, no evidence? The fact that a packet is brought to a trade show is, to my mind, evidence that it was given out to all and sundry. There's no other reason to bring material to a trade show. That's what it's for.
But the plaintiff, Your Honor, had no evidence that anyone other than his...
No, the evidence is that it was brought to a trade show. Right? That is evidence that it was handed out.
The other point I would make, sir, is that passing out evidence hand-to-hand at a trade show does not implicate the interstate commerce reach.
Well, let me ask
of the
you this. If the packet contained misleading or deceptive information, and let's say, for argument's sake, that it was widely disseminated at the show that day, would it then meet the Lanham Act's definition of commercial advertising or promotion?
I would think not, Your Honor, because that's judged in relation to the overall market and the number of customers. And in this case, Mr. Sanderson has said the market is worldwide and involves millions of customers. So even if 10 or 20 of these were handed out in Austin, that doesn't constitute broad enough dissemination. Plus, it doesn't implicate interstate commerce, since they weren't passed out in interstate commerce.
If 1,000 were handed out, would it meet the Lanham Act definition?
I would have to say that would probably be a fact question. I would have to say that would probably be a fact question.
How many people come to this show? Does the record tell us?
No, Your Honor. There's no evidence in the record of that. I would point out that in his brief to this court, the plaintiff did not dispute or assert any argument as to the grounds for the district court summary judgment ruling on the two Lanham Act claims that survived dismissal. So those two issues are not at issue here either. Now, he mentions all of these other publications that were in his compendium of evidence, but there was utterly, well, those materials are not at issue on this appeal either for several reasons. One, most principally, they have nothing to do with the two Lanham Act claims that remained after the district judge dismissed all his others in September 2002. And secondly, he presented no evidence that any of those other materials were distributed in commercial advertising and publication within the meaning of the Lanham Act. And in fact, for example, he's got a couple of Culligan bulletins at tab 4. He mentioned them. But the evidence below was those were each distributed one time in September, or in 1979, 1958, 1988, and 1989, well before the Lanham Act statute of limitations period. Moreover, he had absolutely no evidence that their distribution went any further than Culligan dealers. No evidence that they were passed on to consumers. Now, he's also mentioned his antitrust claims, and those are at issue in today's appeal. But the principal basis for his antitrust claims are his allegations that Culligan and others were distributing derogatory material about magnetic water treatment. This court's opinion in Shakar, however, makes clear that dissemination of negative information about a competitor's product does not violate the Sherman Act, even if the information is false. As this court said, the remedy is not antitrust litigation, but more speech, the marketplace of ideas. Plaintiff relies on Wilk and Hydra Level, but those cases involved enforcement mechanisms. Those were the restraints of trade, as this court explained. In Wilk, the defendant wouldn't let chiropractors associate with medical doctors, and they weren't allowed to get hospital privileges. And in Hydro Level, the plaintiff couldn't sell its product because the defendant's standards were incorporated into building codes throughout the country. Here, in contrast, there is just no restraint of trade. The negative statements didn't prevent him from selling his products and didn't prevent consumers from buying them. Regarding reporting plaintiff to the Federal Trade Commission and state attorneys general, Culligan did not do that but recognizes that his allegations must be taken as true. Even if they're true, they're protected by the Knorr-Pennington Doctrine. And finally, he argues about the trade show ban. For 3 years, he was prevented from displaying his products at WQA trade shows. This does not state a claim of an antitrust violation for the reasons the district court found, because there's no plausible inference that displaying at WQA trade shows was necessary for him to compete, and there's no plausible inference that his absence from trade shows led to increased prices or reduced output to consumers, especially in a worldwide market. Finally, as we pointed out in our brief, the trade show ban was for only 3 years and ended in 1993. Therefore, even if the district court erred and this court reinstated that claim, it would be futile and it would get him nowhere because the trade show ban is outside the statute of limitations. There are no other questions?
Don't appear to be any. Ms. Reindl, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Anything further, Mr. Hendren?
Very briefly, Your Honor. Winston Churchill once said that a lie will travel twice around the world before the truth has a chance to put its pants on. We have a 20-year history of false and misleading information.
You don't think that's enough time for the truth to put its pants on?
Not when the repression is so strong, Your Honor. They have kept this technology in the closet. They have beat him up. They have called him a fraud. They passed out thousands and thousands.
From hiring an advertising agency?
Your Honor, if you don't have any sales because every time you turn around, Culligan's accusing you of being a crook, you cannot afford research. You cannot afford an advertising agent.
You can't afford research. How do you make a scientific claim without research?
Your Honor, he had research.
Well, then he obviously could afford research.
Well, he could not face up to the Purdue report, Your Honor. Thank you, Your Honor. I see I've run out of time. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much. Case is taken under advisement.